So 8:23:31. Yeah, that's ours. Okay, so I'm in the summary as well. So let's go to the summary of the chapter. And we will see what this chapter is about. This is the end of that, the pastime. That pastime was with Vamanadeva. It covered many chapters. So this is the last one, chapter 23. The demigods regain the heavenly planets. So who would like to read this purport? Christina, would you like to?
This chapter describes how Bali Maharaj, along with his grandfather Prahlad Maharaj, entered the planet Sutala and how the Supreme Personality of Godhead allowed Indra to re-enter the heavenly planet. The great soul Bali Maharaj experienced that the highest gain in life is to attain devotional service under the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet in full surrender. Being fixed in this conclusion, his heart full of ecstatic devotion and his eyes full of tears, he offered obeisances to the Personality of Godhead, and then, with his associates, entered the planet known as Sutala. Thus, the Supreme Personality of Godhead satisfied the desire of Aditi and reinstalled Lord Indra. Prahlad Maharaj, being aware of Bali's release from arrest, then described the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this material world. Prahlad Maharaj praised the Supreme Lord for creating the material world, for being equal to everyone, and for being extremely liberal to the devotees, just like a desire tree. Indeed, Prahlad Maharaj said that the Lord is kind not only to his devotees, but also to the demons. In this way, he described the unlimited causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, with folded hands, he offered his respectful obeisances unto the Lord, and after circumambulating the Lord, he also entered the planet Sutala in accordance with the Lord's order. The Lord then ordered Shukracharya to describe Bali Maharaj's faults and discrepancies in executing the sacrificial ceremony. Shukracharya became free from fruitive actions by chanting the holy name of the Lord, and he explained how chanting can diminish all the faults of the conditioned soul. He then completed Bali Maharaj's sacrificial ceremony. All the great saintly persons accepted Lord Vamanadeva as the benefactor of Lord Indra because he had returned Indra to his heavenly planet. They accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the maintainer of all the affairs of the universe. Being very happy, Indra, along with his associates, placed Vamanadeva before him and re-entered the heavenly planet in their airplane. Having seen the wonderful activities of Lord Vishnu in the sacrificial arena of Bali Maharaj, all the demigods, saintly persons, Pitas, Bhutas, and Siddhas glorified the Lord again and again. The chapter concludes by saying that the most auspicious function of the conditioned soul is to chant and hear about the glorious activities of Lord Vishnu.
Thanks. Thank you, Christina. Yeah, there's always such a happy ending, right? These pastimes of Krishna. Just that scene of him getting on the, being invited onto the transcendental aircraft. I wish there was a painting. Do you know if there's a painting of that? That would be really kind of a cool painting. But I don't think so. I haven't seen one. So then Vamanadeva actually gets reinstated on one of the planets of the heavenly planets. I mean, he's there. Like, he's worshipped by his devotees. A lot of the Vishnu incarnations have their own abode. And they're worshipped by those devotees who relate to them in that way, in that form. It's nice because if Krishna just appeared and then disappeared and never was again in that form, those devotees who fell in love with that particular form would just be like, oh, well, we can never see him again that way. But he allows himself to continue to be there, to be worshipped in that way. And Prabhupada says, I think it maybe it's in the next chapter, it's some part in this section that every incarnation has their own planet with their own with their own devotees. So I just want to touch on a few things here. Oma jnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur umilitamena tasmai shri gurave namaha nama om vishnu padaya krishna prashtaya bhutale shimati bhakti vamini tinamani namaste saraswati devi gaurapani pacharani nirvishesha shrinivari pushtachari shtarani jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhu nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So before I just touch on a few things, I wanted to ask, what has been your experience of this pastime? What is something that sticks out to you that you like, that's like a nugget that you're going to take with you from this pastime? Any thoughts? And you can think for a second. Like a life lesson or a piece of wisdom. Yeah, Narottam, do you?
One thing that really stood out for me was that one should be willing to surrender as much as possible to the Supreme Lord, because the Lord is merciful. So he may anyway, if he shows favor, he may anyway take it away. Right.
Mm.
So if we are in this process, then there is no point of holding back, because Krishna is merciful. So he will, like we read in many verses, that he takes away material possessions and material things just to bring the devotee closer to him. So it's better to willingly surrender rather than have it taken away and then go through the purification.
Yeah, that reminds me of how oftentimes when we hold on, just holding on, attachment itself is a source of suffering. So anytime we're holding on, like, no, I want this for me, and I'm like clinging, that just even if Krishna is not directly taking away time, the time factor of Krishna is taking everything away. So at the end of the day, we are going to have to, it's going to be yanked out of our hands. And Prabhupada would say that at the end of, even the most arrogant person at the end of their life, they're going to be, have to bow down to time, the time aspect of Krishna. So yes, that's a really good point, that we have the opportunity as a living, as a soul, to do it willingly. That's our role. And it's whether we want to do it willingly or unwillingly. Either way, we're going to end up, all the material things that we're holding on to are going to be taken away. So thank you. Any lessons? Yeah, Christina.
I'm definitely going to keep thinking about the Lord Ramanadev said that when he said that if you're not happy with three paces of land, then you're not going to be happy with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always the temptation to be like, oh, if I just had this thing, if I just had this thing, then I would be happy. But it's really important to remember that that happiness comes from, you know, your inner life and going deep in your relationship with Krishna.
Oh, I like that. That's a really practical one. I think it's something that we can meditate on daily, right? It's like, it comes up a lot. Should I go for that third serving of pizza? Things like that, you know, and just wondering when are we actually going to be satisfied, and what does that look like? And that, yeah, very, thank you. That's a really great meditation. Yes. Robert, you can pass the mic.
That Krishna is not spiteful in the slightest. And so it just, a lot of people will justify spitefulness, like, this person treated me this way in the past, so they deserve that, I'm entitled to act this way towards them in the future, deserve, like, I get that right. But Krishna's not at all in the slightest like that. And if we should strive to be like Krishna or want to be like Krishna in our attitude, then that's good proof of it.
Wow, that's a great point. Yeah. Is that, do you find that, I'm just asking all of you, do you find that tricky to do in your life, of letting go of, kind of, Krishna's he's the master of everything. He's also the master of forgiveness, right? The master of benevolence. So that is a really good lesson. I think that as humans, I'll just speak for myself, it's definitely something to be worked on, is to not hold those past grudges or those past pain, the when we've been hurt or so on, that we kind of collect those often in a bag, like, here's my hurt bag, right? And just throw them in. Oh, ouch, again. And then after a while, we're like, okay, we start building resentment, and then, you know, it takes a... So yeah, that's a really wonderful lesson of how to become more benevolent and more forgiving. Yeah, thank you. Yes, Radhika.
One thing that I remember was when Kalakanta Prabhu was talking about accepting gurus. And he said, just because you accept a guru, you're not checking your intelligence at the door. So with this example with Bali Maharaj, you know, he did reject Sukracharya's instructions. So we need to be intelligent. But we obviously do surrender to the grief.
Yeah. It's a really good example of balance, right? And the importance of guru, and then when we need to also be thoughtful and not blind followers. Yeah, good point. Any other lessons? Amrita, did you raise your hand earlier?
It was kind of initially related to what Narottam was saying, and then your comment yesterday that really struck me. That, you know, in the first two steps, Lord Vamanadeva took everything that Bali had. But in the end, to give ourselves, this choice is always with us, and Krishna cannot take this choice away from us. And so it's because we cannot have forced surrender in any capacity. So yes, outside of us, everything can be taken away as Krishna's favor, as Krishna's blessing. But this last surrender of ourselves, giving ourselves to Krishna, as you were saying yesterday, this is our choice.
Thank you.
I really like that thought.
Yeah, thanks for reiterating that. I like the way you said that the third step is our choice. You framed it in a nice way. I like that. Yeah, so it's a reminder that as souls, we're never, Krishna doesn't force himself on us ever. So he didn't just step on Bali's head without permission. He actually waited. And then Bali, like you said, he was waiting for us, for Bali to turn to him. Yeah, go Bali.
Yeah, what strikes me is something that was in yesterday's summary of the chapter also. The planet Sutala, which is a lower planet or a heavenly planet, is more opulent than Indra's planet, was described that there's, you know, in the lower planets or the heavenly planets, they're very opulent sometimes, but there's no spiritual happiness. It's all material.
Yeah, I noticed that I think it was two summaries ago that they said Sutala is more opulent than the heavenly planets. So, and it's interesting because it's down. We usually think, oh, the lower regions are dark and, I don't know, depressing, but they're full of opulence as well. So that was, yeah, interesting. So in the second paragraph, if you go to the second paragraph of the summary, the great soul, Bali Maharaj, experienced that the highest gain in life is to attain devotional service under the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet in full surrender. He literally was under the feet of the Lord. What a good feeling that must be. To actually be, sometimes I don't know, I do that in my mind. Sometimes, you know, when life gets really hard, I just kind of picture myself like a tiny little me, like just like going under the form of Krishna's feet, you know, because it's just the shelter that we can get from being there at Krishna's lotus feet. It's maybe something that people might not relate to off the bat because, you know, it involves feet and, like, you know, maybe in the Western context, it might not be as relatable, but with time, as we experience this process of devotional service and we start seeing the person Krishna, his feet become very appealing because it's at his feet where we feel the most, the humility comes. Like, I want to be with you, and I'm going to approach you from that way. Like, please look at me and, you know, see me and let me be of service. So, and then it says, being fixed in this conclusion, his heart full of ecstatic devotion and his eyes full of tears, he offered obeisances to the personality of Godhead. So he's having a lot of emotion here. It would be interesting to see, because early on, remember, he was like, oh, this great person's here. He was starting to feel that inclination of wanting to surrender to Vamana. He was starting to feel that being drawn to him, drawn to Krishna, right? And now that Krishna has actually, he's surrendered completely. He's given everything. And Krishna has actually placed his foot on his head. He's having these ecstatic emotions. So it's almost like the completion of his journey from sadhana bhakti to the ecstasy of pure devotion, right? The whole journey. And he offered obeisances, and surely in that he was also offering prayers. So it's just nice to sometimes have the image, to picture that image of what that must have been like, that evolution of, and I don't know what the time span was, but probably not that long of a time period, because he's taking those steps, right? 1, 2, 3, put the last step. And then this all probably didn't take that long, but within a short amount of time, he went from doing his duties and being, you know, like ruling his kingdom, to then suddenly having this extremely emotional experience with Krishna and feeling love for Krishna. So So it shows that time is not really, it's not a product of time in which this can happen. It's beyond that. The lava matra, right? The in 1/11th of a second, if we're with the right company, we can actually experience something. 1/11th of a second. Okay, then Prahlad is saying here that Krishna is not only kind to his devotees, but also to the demons. Yeah, so Prahlad, Prahlad is his great-grandfather, right? Bali Maharaj's great-grandfather. So Prahlad Maharaj, he came and he became aware of the arrest. And so he starts to praise the Lord. And he's saying, see how he's not just merciful to his devotees, also merciful to the demons. It's kind of a little bit of a play on words because really Prahlad Maharaj is a devotee. And so is Bali Maharaj, but they happen to be in the forms or in the lineage of demoniac. So that's what he means by that. But the heart is of a devotee. And that's again to demonstrate that it's the external is not what determines what's a devotee. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that, that how often it can happen that we judge someone by the externals. And we think, oh, that can't be a devotee because... blah, 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 right? It's very quick. It's very easy. Life is easy. I've noticed one of the most challenging things of Krishna consciousness is striking a balance. Have you noticed that? It's so easy to live in this extreme or that extreme. And the more we read Bhagavatam, the more we realize actually it's pulling together a lot of different things and becoming a mature person who's able to see, hold space for this and this, darkness and light, right? Nescience and auspiciousness. So it's also in our interactions with other people, learning to see those nuances and to look beyond the externals. Yes, Christina.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And it also makes me think about how Lord Krishna is so unpredictable that, you know, whenever you think like, oh, he's like this or he's like this, and then he does something that kind of defies expectations. Mm-hmm. So we go around on our lives being like, oh, well, you know, this person is from this country and they grew up in this family and, you know, they like vote for this political party and therefore they act like this and this and this. But then people just surprise us all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a reminder to always kind of leave room to be surprised.
Oh, I like that. Leave room to be surprised. That's a good quote. Yeah. Wow. Any other thoughts on that, Robert?
Yeah, it's really important. That's kind of a funny example. As soon as I cut my hair, I wanted to like look at anyone with long hair and be like, that's not a devotee. Because I was like, well, if I'm a devotee, I should cut my hair. And that's what makes me a devotee. But it truly isn't. And it's kind of humbling to look at people and understand that they could look however they want to and still be a devotee.
Yeah. Interesting what you said that. Yeah, so I was thinking this compartmentalizing is very easy. It's like life is easier when we can kind of go like good, bad, and just like, okay, life's kind of easy. But when we have to, it takes more effort to go, wait a minute, I want to see what that person is deeper within. What are they saying? What is coming from their mouth? What is coming from their heart? How are they feeling about their relationship with Krishna? That takes more effort. It's like really getting to hear, really hearing someone and really getting to know someone. It's so much easier to go, oh, that person's doing that for a job, or that person's wearing that, they must, or they have long hair, they must. Sometimes you hear something in a class and it just sticks with you for a long time. And Sachi Nanamaraj years and years ago, he said, if Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami walked into the room, if they walked in right now, you would probably externally see, and then he described what you'd see, probably some dustiness, some little bit disheveled, not dressed fully. And he was describing it in a way, he's like, we might immediately go, oh, wow, who are these homeless, I don't know, some negative term might come up, right? Who are these ragabonds or whatever, right? Drifters, different words. But the immediate external presentation might, if we're caught up in externals of this world, we'll be like judging them based off of that. And that would be a great loss because then we wouldn't be open to receiving what they have to share. So it struck me so much and it really shifted something in me. I was young and I was kind of in that, I grew up very much in that, this is good, this is bad, this is what makes you a devotee is the external things. And the problem with that is it can create a culture of inauthenticity where people feel like they have to wear a mask of an external presentation in order to be received within that culture. And it creates loneliness, isolation of devotees too, because then they don't feel like they they'll fit in if they're not able to do certain external things, right? Amrita, please share.
On this matter of externals, yesterday we were reading Gita and we were talking about Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev was on the side of the Kauravas and see that, no, he was loyal to the Kauravas.
Mm-hmm.
But actually his inner heart's desire was in favor of Krishna. He wanted to actually die at the hands of Krishna. Like, was hearing how a lover wants to, you know, be in the hands of the beloved. So similarly, Bhishma, they wanted to, like, see Krishna and wanted to leave his body at the hands of Krishna. And so externally, we can see that, oh, you know, on the Dhritarashtra side. And he'd made some choices to be on that side, for sure. But to go deeper and really understand the complexity of you know, who Bhishma Dev is, you know, it takes, it's more than just what we see outside. So it's really nice to understand that everyone has a really complex and intricate and deep, like, personality.
Mm.
And to really, really bring that out. And that's another thing I like about this pastime. It's like Prahlad Maharaj, Bali Maharaj, they're in demoniac families, you know, yet they're so nice devotees. You know, it doesn't matter, like, where, which kind of families or background or situation we've been in life. So it's nice. So, yeah.
Thank you for that point. And it's interesting that Bali Maharaj and Prahlad, they didn't say, we don't want to be identified as demons, so we're out of here. We're going to go join the, right? Yeah. They didn't care. There's also something about not being so concerned about how others externally delineate us either. So they stayed loyal to their path of serving in this way, of being loyal to their lineage, right? Their kingdoms and their family and so on. And at the same time, internally being those devotees and of character. So even though it's same with us, we might sometimes be labeled a certain way, like, oh, that person's from that, whatever, country or that family or that race, or and people making assumptions based off of that. But what will happen is if we live from our values as devotees, that will end up coming through those layers of the people's judgments and so on. You know, if we keep just staying steady, then others will also benefit from our just the spiritual things that come out. So, yeah. So all these are great points, and I think it's helpful to remember, like, Bhishma Dev and any other examples that come to mind of right off the bat where you would feel like, oh, that's not really a devotee, but then you're surprised or you're, yeah.
Oh, well, Sringi, he judged Parikshit Maharaj because of his apparent.
Mm-hmm.
Parikshit Maharaj put a snake on his father's neck. So it was very, some would say he was right to judge him as a miscreant, as someone, a non-devotee. How could Parikshit Maharaj be a devotee if he's treating someone like that? And so he cursed him. So I was just thinking about this, that how far you actually must go trying not to judge someone, even if there is an apparent action on their end, which is, according to you, objectionable. But still, it always helps to know more, ask questions, and,
yeah,
you know, rather than being judgmental.
That's a really good point. That takes it even to a next level, which is not what we're thinking internally, but what we then respond negatively towards that person because we made an assumption without hearing their side of the story. Because in that story, Sringi didn't get a chance to explain. He didn't. There was no, like, oh, wait, what happened here? And he couldn't say, oh, I was actually in deep trance and I didn't even notice. And then, you know, it wasn't that room. Of course, it's all a pastime meant for the Bhagavatam to be delivered to us. But yeah, so giving opportunity for others to share their complexity or what's happening for them. That's actually the definition of personalism. And we want to be a personal movement, then that's necessary to do that, right? To really hear people without just coming in with our judgment or our expectation of them. Any other, I was thinking about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, how if somebody who was thinking that Krishna consciousness means only people who are renunciates, like dressed in orange and completely detached, if they then saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur being a court magistrate, for example, and having a big family and so on, they might, if they had that very limited idea of spiritual life, think, well, that person's materially involved, and they might make a judgment. And can you imagine what a sad, sad thing that would be to lose the association of someone like Bhaktivinoda Thakur because he made a judgment, right? So that's how careful we need to be is when we're in this society of devotees is to try to, as much as possible, put aside our tendencies to go, wow, label, box in, they must be here, they must be there, and just making quick assumptions, but really getting to, really hearing from the devotees. So I want to read the verse here, 31. This is the last verse of the chapter. Kriyamane karmani dham. Daive pitrieta manushe. Yatra tatranu. Yatra yatranu kirtieta. Tate sham sukritam vidu. Translation. Whenever, you can read this together if you like. Whenever the activities of Vamana Dev are described in the course of a ritualistic ceremony, whether the ceremony be performed to please the demigods, to please one's forefathers in Pitriloka, or to celebrate a social event like a marriage, that ceremony should be understood to be extremely auspicious. Purport. There are three kinds of ceremonies, specifically ceremonies to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead or the demigods, those performed for social celebrations like marriages and birthdays, and those meant to please the forefathers, like the Shraddha ceremony. In all these ceremonies, large amounts of money are spent for various activities, but here it is suggested that if along with this there is a recitation of the wonderful activities of Vamana Dev, certainly the ceremony will be carried out successfully and will be free of all discrepancies. So if you, next time is a birthday, if you want to whip out the Vamana Dev pastime, it's interesting, right? Like a specific mention of birthdays. So, very cool. Do you remember the name of these kinds of verses? Close. It's like flipped. Yeah, Phala Shruti. Or Shruti Phala, but I think it's Phala Shruti is the way that they say it. So, so the fruit of what? Hearing. Yeah, hearing attentively, hearing, really absorbing. So this is the benefit of that. So whenever the activities of Vamadeva are described in these ceremonies, that ceremony is understood to be extremely auspicious. So it's kind of neat, right? Like if there's a birthday or a marriage, we could go, hey, let's say a verse about Vamana Dev. Just kind of an interesting little perk there to make it auspicious. And let's think about why. Why would that be that this would make it auspicious? So it's not just a ritual like, oh, now we heard this, so now let's take a verse of Vamana Dev and just recite it at a birthday and make it kind of automatic or ritual. It's the messages of the pastime that we were describing earlier, those lessons that are imbued in this story of Vamana Dev and in the person of Vamana Dev that bring that auspiciousness. So it's a deep appreciation of hearing about his glories and what he did in this story that leads to that auspiciousness. Because the activities, when they're described, so it's saying whenever the activities are described, what that implies is heartfelt description, not just robotic. Okay, we heard this, now let's read a verse just to get that, check that ritualistic box off for this birthday party. It's not like that. It's, wow, let's think about this person. Let's feel, let's think about what he did and how he affected people's lives. So any questions or comments? Kevin.
All right, well, thank you for class. That was really nice. Thank you for filling in. I was thinking that you know, Bali Maharaj, he wasn't chanting 64 rounds and just like absorbed in bhakti yoga. I was thinking as, you know, this pastime has unfolded of Mother Irmala's class on Dharma. And, you know, if we are trained in our Dharma, we can get to that point of bhakti. And how Bali Maharaj was, you know, he was just following his Dharma. You know, he was very dharmic in the sense where he was giving charity. He was doing what he had to do as a king. And he had shelter of a spiritual master, and he just did everything right. And then from that, by following that nicely, he got the opportunity to then experience these symptoms of loving exchanges with the Lord. So,
is it a comment or a question?
It was a comment.
Comment, yeah. Yeah, it's a really good one. That it makes me think how Krishna consciousness, or the process of coming to Krishna consciousness is, or perfection of Krishna consciousness, is very simple in a way. It's like he didn't do all these complicated things. It was like he had the guru, he was acting according to his values, according to the values of bhakti yoga, of acting according to your nature, like that career dharma was talking about. And being simple-hearted. Do you notice that in Bali Maharaj? He's kind of a simple-hearted person, ready to, he's just there, not presumptuous, not, what do you call that when someone's kind of two-faced or double-faced, you know, that duplicitous, right? He's kind of, yeah, simple-hearted. And that quality of his nature, he was kind of authentic person, like just doing his service, being in that life, living his dharma, serving, doing his best. And in with that quality, then when Krishna comes along in person, he's ready with that simple-hearted, good person energy. He's ready to just take the next step very quickly because he's doing all those things nicely. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Or controversies or doubts? Yes, Kevin.
One of the examples of, you know, not judging externals that came up that I wanted to share was Akrura. You know, he was like working on the Kamsa, but like deep down inside, he was just had this burning desire to meet with Krishna again. And when the opportunity came up, he jumped on it. He's like, okay, I'm going to go get him. I'm going to go look for him.
Yeah, amazing. It would be such an amazing, this would be such an amazing film, that the hidden life of Akrura, just like, because externally, like everyone thought he was just in the kingdom with alliance with Kamsa, but he had a completely inner life that was so different. Yeah, loyal to Krishna. Huh. It's also nice because it's required that sometimes devotees are in positions like that in order to help create those bridges in society. Like sometimes we're going to see devotees who are in that context of, oh, they look like they're in the context of a material political party or something, but they're actually going to be the ones that help bring Krishna to that situation, right? That's what Akrura did. He was there. He was like probably quite lonely. Probably, I don't know, maybe he had his like little devotee huddles or something, but grassroots thing, I don't know. But yeah, just and another one that comes to mind is Ravana's brother, Ravana, Vibhishana. Similar, right? Similar to Akrura in the sense that he was a devotee in the kind of the wrong camp, but he was there doing his duties, but his heart was with Ram. But then he continued to stay, you know, continued to serve over there on that side. But yeah, anyway, it's a good point. Yeah, Amrita.
Was Gadadhar Pandit. Mm. When he met his spiritual master, Pundarik Vinati, but I don't remember his name. So he was traveling, and I think, I don't know if it was Murari Gupta or who took Gadadhar Pandit to see this person, and immediately he was judgmental. How is this a devotee? He has so many rings on his fingers, and he has all this beautiful, opulent, you know, things. I can't imagine that this is a devotee. And then this person, sorry, it's been a long time since I heard this pastime. And then the person that Gadadhar Pandit was, he recited a verse or something. And as soon as he recited a verse, this person that Gadadhar Pandit was just judging immediately, you know, there was like ecstasy and like started reciting all these other verses. So it was like, you know, Gadadhar Pandit immediately then and there, he surrendered. He's like, you're my spiritual master. I'm sorry for judging you in that way, and just surrendered his life.
Yeah. The name was Mukunda, yeah. Yeah, nice story. Yeah. One thing I wanted to just end on here is to apply this to our life is very often on social media, especially I think Facebook has become really known for this, is like these kinds of quick judgments about people in the comment thread. Like, ah, oh, you're, you have, you know, things like that, just like kind of really harsh criticisms. And maybe other social media platforms as well, but just in general, the internet has that quick to just write your comment and make your assumption about someone, about their whole life based off a little reel, something like that, or a little post that they made. And so what we can do when we're applying this principle in our life, as we navigate the internet especially, is to be careful, because sometimes the internet can activate that part of us that's like, yeah, I want to get on board with this side or this side. And like, I want to make this judgment about this devotee, or I want to fight it with the opposite and then judge the person who's judging and like get in that whole mood, right? It kind of stirs up that. So one thing we can do is just be aware of that tendency that's within us as humans to make quick judgments. And then when we see those, to try to remember that there's so much more that we don't know, and to give, someone said, space for the, what was it?
Surprise.
Space for the surprise. And that usually in the sense of letting them show us, give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's see, let's hunt out the good instead of hunting out the negative. Let's fight those things and go, no, let's stand up for the devotees. You know, anyway, I get so frustrated when I see how quickly devotees who have dedicated their lives for so long, how quickly just like, they just get blasted so fast on the internet without much awareness or conscious understanding of that personality and what they've done. So, yeah. Okay. So that's a little thing we can do in our life. Thank you all. And it was a really nice pastime, I think, just to meditate on little on Vamanadeva. And he came in such a non-assuming form, but then he completely transformed Bali Maharaj's life. And he can also completely transform our life. And we can pray to him to place his foot on our head as well, and to transform us and see what magic happens in your life. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Vamanadeva ki jai, Bali Maharaj ki jai, Gaur Premanandi.